Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall flashback.
He feels great. Pitched yesterday, got up to 50 pitches, recovering well. Yeah, I think we've kind of cleared the bar of with the little nagging stuff that he had going on. And yeah, excited to see him continue to build up this spring.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mark Grody in for Mully today, talking baseball. Cubs and Sox, 312-644-6767. Specifically, what they have in their rotations, which one you would prefer, and which one is more reliable heading into the season, which begins on Thursday, opening day. Cubs and Brewers right here on The Score on Thursday afternoon. The White Sox open up in Houston against the Astros. And Jose Abreu, that sounds weird to say. That was Tommy Howdeby coming in, talking about Justin Steele, the young left-handed pitcher that for some reason Mark Grody loves to hate. But Justin Steele is a guy who gave you 24 starts last year, 318 earned run average. Don't look at the record because wins don't matter. Remember that, Grody? 4-7, but he does have the stuff. He does look the part. But I understand your hesitation.
He's promising.
He's promising.
What set me off was our guy Kevin. Love Kevin. But the idea that, you know, taking shots at me because, as he said, that I think Justin Steele is a scrub. No, I'm just not looking at a guy who's 27 years old, who's the number three man in the rotation, and saying, yeah, that guy's going to be an ace by the end of this year. He's a very promising player at this point, and I look forward to seeing what he's doing. But to like come after me because I'm not like completely sold on Justin Steele is ridiculous.
I think that's fair. 708 texter weighs in, and it's a good one. Scott from Oak Park. Wow, Justin Steele is really proven. Has as many career games started as Lance Lynn has in 4 individual seasons. Justin Steele, 33 career starts. That's a point well taken.
Yeah.
That's a point well taken. Yeah. Lance Lynn, when he came to the White Sox, was known as a very durable starter. I don't know that he was durable last year, Mark. I don't think that his health at this stage of his career is as predictable as it was when he signed with the White Sox. And I think when he came here last year, injuries limited Lance Lynn to 21 starts. And so you need more out of that for him to be for the White Sox to get out of the season what they can get out of the season. And I am only reacting in my hesitation to be all in on the Sox because I was there a year ago. I believed they had that team. I believed in that rotation. And I was disappointed. My hopes were dashed along with everybody on the South Side, everybody in town. That was the most disappointing team in baseball. I'm not going to fall for it again. I'm in the prove it mode. I'm in the show me phase.
You've been hurt before?
I've been hurt
before.
Mark,
that's
Grody.
What we're dealing with here right now.
Yes.
David Haw with a cry for help. I'm here.
It's a plea.
For you.
It's a plea, bro.
No. I do understand. I mean, we all rode the White Sox roller coaster last year. But if you take a deep breath and you look at both of the starting rotations for the Cubs and the Sox, the Cubs still have a lot of developing to do in terms of their staff and the White Sox. Their guys are made men. It's just a matter of, like you said, the health aspect. And I love the fact that Giolito is a with this core and with it getting closer to last call, I love that Giolito's a free agent because I do believe in the free agent bump year, and that's okay.
Well, I'm just glad he adjusted his body again.
Really? I don't care anymore. I don't know anymore because he sold me on being big last
but
year.
But yeah, I think that you were buying it, and I wasn't.
You weren't buying it last year? Okay.
Because I think that he came back, and he was – really had added 25 pounds of muscle, and immediately Steve Stone picked up on it, and other people looked at it, and like, this guy looks bigger than he needs to be, and it doesn't look as fluid as he used to be.
Is that like Seiya Suzuki? Same thing? Seiya Suzuki shows up, I'm huge! I'm hurt!
He looks jacked like an NFL cornerback. And then all of a sudden, he's got an oblique strain. He's got too many muscles to pull. That could be a problem, Mark. I don't know if you have that problem.
I do not have that problem right now.
You can have too many muscles to pull.
Oh, my God.
But Lucas Giolito comes back. I do hope that he has the kind of success that he had when he was contending for Cy Young's, when he was at the top of the rotation considered an ace. I don't consider him an ace right now.
Lynn, you're back on here, did you say? Who?
Giolito.
Oh, Giolito. I'm sorry.
I don't have Giolito penciled in as a potential ace.
No,
I don't think Lance Lynn is an ace caliber pitcher. Maybe when healthy. Dylan Cease is your guy. Dylan Cease is one of the best young pitchers in the American League, in all of baseball. I get that. You want to attach your hopes and hit your wagon to Dylan Cease? I'm all in. Yeah. I'm all on. But
when you look at the Sox rotation, though, like Cease, Lynn, Giolito, Kopech, and we'll leave Clevenger out of this for right now. Like any of those guys, unlike the Cubs, and I hear you with the injury stuff, they all have the potential on any given night to do absolutely wow. Like Cease can be wow. Giolito can be wow. Kopech, we're still kind of waiting for his consistent wow.
Waiting for years.
But no, he's had some good moments.
Yes.
He's had some really good moments out of the bullpen, for sure, and as a starter. But there aren't enough of the wow moments. But there are. Like when you watch Kopech pitch.
He pitched 25 starts last year, 119 innings. His ERA is 3.54. He does have electric stuff. But he's not consistent.
Yeah.
And he can't stay on the mound.
I agree with that. But that's my point here. Like Cease, Lynn, Giolito, Kopech, special, can be special on any given day. Stroman, Tyone, Steele, Smiley? No, I don't see the same thing over on the north side right now.
309, Scott from Pontiac, Texan. Got to be the Cubs rotation. They've got the depth, and Wesneski will be the ace after this year. The White Sox are one sneeze away from losing another player.
I mean,
well put, Scott.
Is in the 816, I don't know what this is. I haven't heard anything. Is Justin Steele in declining health?
I don't think
no,
so.
No, I think he's fine.
No. He's fine. He's healthy.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing about the Sox and the Cubs, though, when you're comparing the pitching. And I think that overall, the one thing you hear about the Cubs consistently, whether it's players, and maybe we are myopic, and maybe we are, you know, hearing this because we're listening and we talk to most people, obviously, on the Cubs and around them. The pitching infrastructure that they have created there is well-respected around the league, and one of the reasons why there's this confidence that young pitchers like Justin Steele, like Hayden Wesneski, can develop and thrive in that environment, that they will come in, they'll give them their information. They'll have it spit out a computer, and they'll look at it on video, and they'll tell them exactly what arm angle you need, what grip you must have, and then all of a sudden your slider is unhittable, or all of a sudden your velocity increases. All of a sudden things happen like they have with Javier Assad or Justin Steele or other examples that make you have confidence in guys to reach the potential.
And a great example is Scott Efros from last year and what they did to turn him around and go sidearm and then eventually trade him for Hayden Wesneski. So I agree with all that. Like everything, and Justin Steele falls in the category. I call him promising for sure, but he's got a lot more to show me before I start throwing dollars.
See,
Steele's way.
You have the same approach with Justin Steele, I think, that I have with the entire White Sox rotation, only because I feel like I've been scarred.
Proceed with caution.
Yes, proceed with caution. As 847 says also, there's only one Justin in this town.
That's true.
And it's not Steele.
Bears.
Bears.
What time are we talking to Finley? Patrick Finley, 8:25 from the World Ownership Meetings.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You're not getting out of the baseball conversation that fast, Mr. Bears
hey,
guy.
Dude, I've talked so much Bears since the season ended that it is nice and refreshing to talk baseball. By the way, on the clock tonight, 6 to 7, all to all Bears.
Nice tease. Who you got on the show?
We have Howard Griffith from of Illini fame.
Oh.
So we're going to talk about some of the Illini
Love
guys.
Howard.
There's a lot. There's some real dudes.
Devon Witherspoon's top 10 pick.
Oh, absolutely. Sidney Brown and then his twin brother, Chase Brown. Met both the Browns at
the combine. He's a downhill
runner. Yeah.
Would he be good in the zone blocking scheme? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we don't talk about running backs, really, beyond, what's his face, Bijan Robinson. But Chase Brown, that's a real running back for Illinois.
All right, let's get back to baseball.
Okay, Bears.
We get back to baseball because the Cubs play the Sox again today, and opening day is right around the corner. And I'm curious what people think about the respective pitching rotations and also expectations built around this season. It will also come down to the managers. I wonder about the faith and confidence that people have in Pedro Grifol for the Sox. David Ross, to a lesser degree, I think he's already more proven. But Ozzie Guillen on the NBC Sports Chicago preview show last night made kind of a declaration about Pedro Grifol that I think that I imagined you sitting at home, Mark Grody, cringing, and Ozzy predicting great things from Pedro Grifol.
What is your bold prediction, Ozzy?
Will you come up with a bold prediction? It's hard to predict right now because they haven't played one game yet. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to present the trophy, the 2023 Manager of the Year, to Pedro Grifol. How about that?
Really?
You're going to pick him as your manager of the year.
Okay, I wanted you to pick yours.
Okay, hold on a second.
I'm going to pick.
We have the crystal ball. I forgot
2023.
To take it out.
Hey, right. By the way, I want to present it, okay? I want to say, here it is, buddy, because I think this guy's it. How about you?
What do I see in my crystal ball?
Yes.
I see Andrew Vaughn hitting 30 home runs for the White Sox. That's what I see.
Well, that, I can't have it, but manager of the year, you had to have some marvels to pick this man to be mine. If this man is the manager of the year,
yeah.
And I think they are because they let him do what he's supposed to do, let him work what he's supposed to work with the team. This man is a great baseball man.
That's Ozzie Guillen.
This man is like, I'm sure he's a great baseball man. Where's Ozzie getting all? Like,
well, I talked to Ozzie after the show. I was at NBC Sports Chicago last night, and he was talking, of course, about this prediction. And it's based on how he ended that segment. He believes that they're going to let Pedro Grifol be his own guy.
You don't think Tony La Russa was his own guy?
But I don't think that guy was the right guy for the team.
But that's the dugout. And that brings me to the whole point. How in the hell does anybody know if Pedro Grifol is the right guy? So I'm not getting enough of the whys here. I am bereft of the whys.
Here's
on
what
a
I
lot
don't understand about
Mark
morning. Grody in your logic applying to the White Sox. Why you question or why you believe so fully in a starting rotation that has historically let you down health-wise,
I just think they're
while being skeptical about a manager whose early returns are he's having an impact.
You're supposed to be skeptical about a guy who has never managed in Major League Baseball and is going to a brand new team that I think is still ready to win. Why aren't there more people that are skeptical? And I believe everybody when they say he's a great guy and that he's making people hit the cutoff, man. But I stand by that's every single new manager that comes into. You don't think like any manager that starts with a team is the same. We're going to change the way we do things around here. We're going to have a winning culture on this team. We're going to grind out wins this year. We're going to overachieve. And that's exactly what Pedro Grifol has done. And I hope that is the case. But this blind love for a guy that's never managed in Major League Baseball, yeah, it is starting to get to me a little bit.
It's getting to you.
It's really got to me yesterday, and now it's over the top.
See, now, I was prepared for Ozzie's prediction only because I spent Saturday morning with Bruce, and Bruce had made a similar prediction for Pedro Grifol, and Bruce went a step further in predicting Yoan Moncada would be the MVP. I think that was nonsensical, even though I respect where Bruce is coming from.
Where was he coming from?
Well, if Yoan Moncada, he's looking at the 2019 version.
Can't you do that with every player on the Sox?
Yes.
Right? Like
that's
every
my point, is that with the White Sox, there's so much potential.
Yeah.
And talent-wise, on paper, they are a division champion. The problem is it's tissue paper
because
it's so very fragile and it can be pulled apart easily. And that is the biggest issue with the White Sox. So I fell for it last year. I'm just not falling for it now. I think that I hope that they win 90 games. They're capable of winning more. But I just don't see it happening because of health.
Yeah, and I do want to be clear, too. I'm not saying that the Sox staff is – I agree with what you're saying. You have to agree with what you're saying about health because it's just objectively true. But when we play the game of comparing the Cubs starting staff to the White Sox starting staff, I am without a doubt, no hesitation, I'll take the Sox starting staff.
All right, 312-644-6767. Let us know what you think. Are you ready for baseball season? What surprises – are in store. Here's one that I didn't expect to see yesterday, only because I was told that Billy Hamilton was a guy that was going to help the Sox win games in April. Billy Hamilton was a guy that was going to help the Sox benefit from the rules changes, and he's the guy that's going to steal second, and then he's going to steal third, and then can he steal first? Apparently not, because he was one of seven guys reassigned to minor league camp yesterday. Billy Hamilton, along with Lourie Garcia, not going to be in the dugout on opening day.
Oh, they'll be back. Oh, they'll. I mean, who's going to play third base on opening day? Berger's not even there, right? How's your Berger? He's in the minors or not going to be there on opening. So somebody's probably going to have to get elevated, right? Is that going to be.
Well, the bad news yesterday wasn't Hanser Alberto. Helped off with some sort. Didn't he have an injury situation? Wasn't he hit?
I think you're thinking about PCA's home run for the Cubs on the backfields.
Is that what I'm thinking about?
I think that's what you're thinking about.
No, that's not what I'm thinking about.
That was going through my brain just now for some reason. What? Pete Crow Armstrong, sick, hitting a home run on the backfields yesterday. I'm watching you, PCA.
You're going to be watching for a while. He's not on his way. He's not here anytime soon.
Not yet. I mean, they got to give Cody Bellinger a shot in center field, right?
Hanser Alberto was hit in the hand, and he had to leave the game. So you may think, like, who the heck is he? He's hitting over 400 in spring training. He's a reason why some of these other moves are being made. He's a guy that, to his credit, Chuck Garfine identified at the beginning of spring training as hitting the cover off the ball, and he has continued that. He's also 30, so I don't think that he's a guy that can be considered a prospect, but certainly an unknown quantity.
I'll give Texter a good point here. From the 708, Chuck asked for a bold prediction. That's where Ozzy is coming from. Good call. Chuck did, because I was like, where did Ozzy get the Pedro?
If he was asking
for a bold prediction, that's a good bold prediction.
We don't typically ask for bland predictions.
No, that's true.
Give me your best bland prediction for 2023.
Best bland prediction will be Nico Horner. No. Christopher Morel will come up in June and go 5-for-10 and then 0-for-his-next-32.
By the way, you mentioned Nico Horner to catch people up if they missed it. Nico Horner signs a 3-year, $35 million extension with the Cubs. Jeff Passan was first on that. It provides cost certainty for the Cubs. It provides security for Nico Horner. Peace of mind that I think matters to him. He can avoid arbitration now. He can play second base now. He knows where he's going to spend the next several years and put himself in a position to still hit the open market at 29.
On the Cubs, Nico Horner, promising. That's why I put that's a promising play. Dansby Swanson, good, really good play. Seiya Suzuki, right? Promising. Hap, promising. And that's all I got for you.
Ian Hap,
position-wise.
Is he next? Also, Ian Hap going to be on the Bernstein and Holmes show today at noon.
Nice.
Looking forward to that conversation.
He'll break the news.
They can ask. I don't know if they've been breaking any news. Well, maybe he could. That's why you want to tune in.
Yeah.
Miss a little, miss a lot.
Yeah.
Ian Hap, though, the next guy on the list of Cubs who could potentially sign contract extensions, they're doing with Nico Horner, or they did with Nico Horner, what they failed to do with previous core players. Do you think Ian Hap is next? What kind of priority should he be, Mark Grody?
I think that they will make him a priority. I think he's proven that. He's had now two really good years, or at least a good year and a half, because he had a good – I know how you like second halves of seasons. He did have a really
good –
That's
a shot. That's a shot.
But I'm with you on this. His good second half 2 years ago did lead to a good season for Ian Happ last year, who was never traded. I think it would be a really good move, and I think that you don't break the bank for somebody like Ian Happ at this point, but I do think that that's one of your players. That's a former first-round pick who has steadily gotten better.
if they come up with a deal that is as team-friendly as Horner's, then I think they will make the move.
Yeah, it's not going to be as team-friendly as Horner's, but I think you can come to some sort of agreement that makes both parties happy.
I agree with that in theory and principle. If they don't, I'm not going to panic. I don't think they have the urgency, if you want to call it that. I don't know if it's as high of a priority with Hap as it was with Horner, because you look at what's behind Hap in the system. You mentioned PCA.
Yeah,
people are looking at their watches already, waiting for him to arrive. And I think that Brendan Davis, Alcantara, Velasquez, you have some options in the minors that you don't have in the infield necessarily. Mm-hmm. So I think that Hap's situation is different from Horner's. There, even though there are similarities, people want to draw these parallels. I understand that, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's going to be the next move yet. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, that all that said, I think we're proving it today, or at least maybe I am. I'm ready for the season to start. Like, we've reached that point where we've said it all. You know what I mean? I mean, there's more to say and to preview. And now it's time to...
Well, don't turn your radios off on Tuesday morning. We got to wait till Thursday, Grody. Come on, what are you doing turning people away? We got plenty more to say.
I don't think anybody's listening right. I don't think anybody's listening right now and go, oh, that's it for the baseball preview? That's it? The season start? Goodbye. Click.
All right.
Done with the score.
We're going to talk Bulls next. Cody Westerlund will break down what happened last night to the Bulls in their loss to the Clippers. Bulls Talk with Mark Grody, who's in for Mully. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We've got 5 seconds left. Bulls will put it in play and then head back to Chicago tomorrow. Yeah. And this game is over. Clippers win it 124-112 as the Clippers go 20 of 40 from three-point range.
Welcome back. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's Mully and Haw. Mark Grody in for Mully. That was Chuck Swirsky after the Bulls. 124-112 loss to the Clippers. This is the de facto Bulls postgame show. So we're talking about what happened in Los Angeles. The Bulls finished their West Coast road swing 2-1, and that brings us to our guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sports book. That's where we find the editor of 670thescore.com, Cody Westerlund. Good morning, Cody.
How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thanks for getting up. We know it was a late one watching that defensive lapse by the Bulls. Well, not a pretty to see, Cody. Overall, was this just the product of having back-to-back in L.A.? Was this a product of, you know, just the Clippers hitting 20 three-pointers and 50% of their shots behind the arc? How do you chalk up what happened last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it's back-to-back. I think a lot of it was Alex Caruso being out with the left foot soreness, which is certainly something that has bothered him for weeks now, and an ailment that the team has said he's going to have to deal with the rest of the year. So with it being a back-to-back, not as much time for him to recover. So he sat out. You've kind of seen this at times. Like, the Bulls' defense has been pretty darn solid all season. But when they're really clicking and going here since the Patrick Beverley addition, you can see how Caruso and Beverley combine to create a lot of havoc, a lot of chaos, and they didn't have as much of that last night. And I thought one of the things that was difficult, Billy Donovan didn't like how the Bulls basically were chasing the whole night, not closing out on shooters well. He thought the Clippers did a really good job on the drive and kick, and the Bulls couldn't keep up with them. A big reason that happens is because you don't have Alex Caruso at the point of attack, whether it's at the top of the key, whether it's on the wing, whoever the other team wants to initiate stuff with. He's not blowing up screens. He's not fighting through them. That sends everybody basically into a cycle of chasing. And it's just more difficult for the Bulls to play that way when they only have kind of one of Caruso and Beverley out there.
Dan, Caruso had a great game against the Lakers the day before, creating, you know, causing offensive fouls, covering LeBron in the post. So, yeah, I mean, every night we watch that guy play, he makes two or three really good defensive plays. But one of the bigger problems for the Bulls last night, like, Nicholas Batum was just a walking heat check last night. Was there something that they could have done to Batum, or was he just hot last night?
Well, it's interesting, right? So he made 8 three-pointers, a season high for Batum. And like you said, he was the difference maker in the game. And I rewatched most of those three-pointers. And A few of them were wide open because the Bulls gave Kawhi Leonard some extra attention. Kawhi, I think, had three of the assists to Batum. And that's just part of the game plan sometimes, right? Like Billy Donovan was explaining, when Kawhi had a mismatch or he was getting the ball deeper, closer to the post, they wanted to double and send some help. So they did that a few times and it burned them. But I thought there were some real mental mistakes the Bulls made in guarding Batum as well. And you can say, you know, part of that's Caruso being out. There's more guys driving into the lane. Those guys are naturally sucked into the lane. So, like, you kind of understand why it happens. But I think I know I saw Patrick Williams on, like, two of them just step into the lane and off Batum where his teammates didn't need help. Ayo Dosunmu was guarding Batum on the wing on one of the plays, and Kobe White and Vooch had the point of attack kind of under control. Like, no one in the NBA cares if someone shoots a 20-foot two-pointer, and that's what the Clippers were walking into. And Ayo went over there to help and left Batum, and it's just like, what are you doing at that point? So I didn't think the Bulls adhered to the game plan very well, and I would probably be remiss if I didn't point out, too, that DeMar DeRozan was a primary defender on Batum for some long stretches, and DeMar just isn't covering much ground defensively right now, guys. Like, we look at his offensive stats, and, like, he's so talented with the ball in his hands. He's so smart. He's so strong. He knows how to get to his spots that even when he has this quad strain, like, he can put up an efficient offensive night and share the ball and have good-looking assist totals. But, like, defensively, he can't close out very well on guys. And I thought that's part of the issue, too, was DeMar being a little bit slowed lately. And there's really no way around that, right, when he's 34 and it's late into the season and you got to play hard every night for this play-in push.
Talking to Cody Westerlund, the editor of 670thescore.com here on the Mully and Haas Show. Mark Grody in for Mully. So, Cody, you mentioned Patrick Williams, and you watch him sometimes. Like last night, there were some decisions to rotate that just didn't make basketball sense. And offensively, sometimes you see him disappear and make decisions that don't always make basketball sense. Here we are. I know he's young, and it's way too early to maybe draw some conclusions, but are you beginning to wonder about his instincts? Do you wonder about some of the basketball decisions that he makes that make you feel like he's not getting it? Where are you with him in that regard?
Oh, it's like you're reading my text to some of my friends. We were texting about him the other day, and like I called him one of the most Patrick Williams. I called him one of the most confusing players I'd ever seen in this like 10-year stretch for me covering the Bulls, certainly, and just watching the NBA closely. Like, the kid has the physical tools. He is as humble as they come. Good work ethic. And like, this is an important fact. Like, he can shoot the ball, right? Like, he's shooting 42% from 3-point range. He's got a nice soft touch. Like, the guy has all these skills and the right attitude. And what you see from him is not enough production. And like, the only way you can really trace it is, like you brought up, like those instincts, right? And we've talked a lot about like Patrick Williams' fire and passion for rebounding and stuff, or the lack thereof. He's not a very good rebounder. Like, I don't think it's because he's not naturally trying, right? It's not like he doesn't have the passion to go get the rebound as much as it is. I think, like, I just don't think he always knows where he needs to be on the court, and he doesn't know how to use those physical tools to reach his potential or hit the ceiling of what he can do. And I'm not talking right now just for his entire career. There's still plenty of time to do that, but just within the realm of what you would hope to see out of him in the third year. So, like, that's why he's confusing to me, because, like, it's really promising, his ability to shoot the basketball. And you see him and what he can do and some of the blocks he makes here and there. But then you just look at some of the other things, the rebounding, like, he has more turnovers than assists in his career, like, which is just a huge indicator of he doesn't really know where to pass the ball when he does have an advantage sometimes. So, like, that's why he's so confusing to me. And I think just part of it is experience, but the question is, like, that's how it's kind of weird and difficult, right? The Bulls are in a win-now mode, and he might develop into someone who's really good down the line, but it's not happening as quickly as you like. So that's why you see him playing more within this system for the Bulls and being the number five offensive option, or number four, I guess, now a little bit, you might say. But he is a confusing player to me.
That's such a great word, confusing. And I like that word because it's still – the show's promise that he's not – nobody's given up on Patrick Williams. He was smooth last night, 7 of 8 from the field. I thought, after I saw him, hit a jumper inside the arc last night and then a three-pointer. And this is in the first quarter. I thought that he was going to have I thought maybe we were going to see a Patrick Williams game, but he was still extremely efficient, 7 of 8 from the field.
You look at the box score, he was tremendous, right? He had 16 points, as you said, on 7 of 8 shooting.
Yeah.
He guarded Kawhi, who Kawhi got his 22.
Yep.
He was efficient from the field, but Kawhi did not hang 33 or 38 like he has on the Bulls here before in recent years and totally dominate the game. Some of that was the defensive help, and Patrick Williams was the primary defender. You look at that, you're like, great. But then you're like, oh man, he made 2 or 3 defensive miscues that were just atrocious that gave the Clippers wide open threes. Like, that's 6 or 9 points that you could say is directly responsible on one player. On one possession, the Clippers drove like baseline or to the right side. Williams collapsed off of Eric Gordon to take away a passing lane to Russell Westbrook, who I would bet $1,000 the Bulls had in the game plan to leave open from 3-point range, right?
they should.
He took that away and left the pass to Gordon. And now, in fairness, it was a really good pass and maybe not the one you'd expect them to make to Gordon. So, like, that's why the Clippers play elite basketball at a high level. But the point is never to take away a Russell Westbrook 3-pointer. So, like, you look at these things and you're just like, looks really good, but that's what drives coaches crazy, right? Like, when guys don't play as many minutes or have as big of a role in moments as you expect in the NBA, it's usually one of two things. It's they're getting outworked and outplayed in practice, and we can't see that on a daily basis, or especially later in the season when they don't practice as much, they're not following the game plan as well as coaches want, and we don't know every aspect of the game plan, and the coaches are driven crazy by that.
Cody, we only have a minute left, but please, if you can, tell us the difference. The Bulls now have a one game. They're in 10th. They're 3 games ahead of the 11th place Wizards and Pacers. They're 1 game behind the Hawks and Raptors in the 8th and 9th spot. Could you explain to me and to our audience what the difference would be between being in the 8 or 7 spot and the 9 and 10 spot?
Yeah, so put 7 and 8 together, put 9 and 10 together. Huge difference. If you're 7th or 8th, you got to win 1 game to make the playoffs, the traditional 8-team bracket, and you get 2 tries. If you're 9 or 10, you got to win 2 games, and if you have 1 slip-up, you're going to be out. So 7 and 8 play for the 7 seed. The loser of that game plays the winner of 9-10 for the 8 seed. So I know that was kind of quick and everything, but a very big difference, because if you get to 7 or 8, it's you go win 1 game, and you're in the playoffs. And let me tell you, this is not an NBA champion contender. So even when the Bulls are playing really good basketball here lately, by their standards, really tough basketball, we've seen this. A lot of these games are still close. They come down to the wire, and you're always 1 dud away, even if you're playing good basketball. When you're in that 9-10 spot, you're 1 dud away from missing the playoffs. So it is a big difference for the Bulls, which is why climbing up a couple more spots would be big for them here over the final 7 games.
Great stuff, Cody. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Yep, you guys take care.
Cody Westerlund, the editor of 670thescore.com. That's where you can find our Bulls coverage. Great reading, good stuff from Cody. Mark Grody, when we come back, a lot of news out of the NFL owners' meetings, a lot of news in terms of quarterbacks still who are dealing with situations that are unresolved and relationships that need repaired. We'll talk about it next. It's Mullin Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I haven't seen the tweet. It's an ongoing process. I'm following it very closely, just like everybody else is here, and looking forward to a resolution. I'm excited, thinking about Lamar all the time, thinking about him as our quarterback. We're building our offense around that idea, and I'm just looking forward to getting back to football, and I'm confident that's going to happen.
Mullin Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mark Grody in for Mully today. Let's talk football. Let's talk about John Harbaugh. That was his voice you heard talking at the NFL owners' meetings about Lamar Jackson, the quarterback, the former MVP. The Ravens tagged him, applied the franchise tag. 7 days before they did that, Mark Grody, we learned yesterday via social media that Lamar Jackson requested a trade. So what can happen with the franchise tag is that other teams can offer up to, it would cost them 2 first-round draft picks to sign Lamar Jackson and make that deal. And so he's out there for other teams to negotiate with, to pursue. We've heard from a lot of teams via social media, sources say the Falcons aren't interested, the Bucks aren't interested, whoever is not interested. People were running away from this story to the point where people wondered if there was collusion involved. Now we see John Harbaugh talking like a coach must talk, because that is his expectation. Build an offense around a guy who can run it and who has run it before. What do you think is happening next? What's the next phase to this story? And tell me how it might affect the Bears if you think that it could.
Well, the way it could affect the Bears is if he does land somehow in the division. And there are two teams in the division, in the Lions and the Packers, that could probably use upgrades at quarterback. That is assuming that the Rodgers deal becomes official. And, you know, obviously the Lions had a good season this year, but that's obviously with Goff, that is an upgradable spot. So that's a little bit of the fear. I'm looking at, like, not now that he's official on the market and demanding a trade, which I guess was, you know, earlier this month, but, like, how will it affect the draft? Like, are Carolina, Houston, would the Colts be interested in a 26-year-old game-changing quarterback?
Why wouldn't you be? Think about that. I don't understand the hesitation here, except for maybe concerns about the durability.
That's all it is.
And the reluctance to give him a guaranteed contract, which he reportedly wants. And I get why he would seek that, based on how often he runs the football and puts himself in harm's way. The Colts, we heard from Chris Ballard, who didn't dismiss the possibility. He called him a special player. He talked openly about Lamar Jackson to the Colts and that possibility. Then we hear from Jim Irsay later in the evening, who didn't sound like a guy willing to give out guaranteed contracts. But it's conceivable. The real thing you have to keep an eye on from a Chicago point of view is what you reference and why this is potentially a local story. If the Lions decide that, you know what, we are willing to give up our two first-round draft picks this year, we are willing to rethink the future of our organization and not commit to Jared Goff, who had a very productive 2022, surprisingly productive.
He had a good year.
If Lamar Jackson goes to the Detroit Lions, given all the talent they have accumulated in this offseason, then it becomes real in Chicago. Then you have a clear-cut favorite in the division, and that spells trouble.
Oh, yeah.
That spells trouble, L-A-M-A-R.
Yeah, I would like to see the Justin Fields versus, like, can you imagine Lamar Jackson and Justin Fields being in the same division for 8 or 9
years?
That
would be awesome. I think it would be great, especially on that surface, in that building.
Yeah.
Goodness sakes.
Oh, my God, that would be fun. Seattle has two picks in the first round. Their first pick.
Yeah, they just invested in a quarterback. Geno's the man. Geno's the man, and they're going to draft one.
I haven't heard that since the Jets took him. Geno's the man. Jesus. Really? Do you think Geno's the man?
I think they invested in Geno
they did.
And he had a comeback year. Don't scoff at that, Mark
Okay.
Brody.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about disgruntled quarterbacks. Let's talk about guys who don't know where they're going to be, you know, playing in 2023 as of now. Aaron Rodgers. We heard from Brian Gutekunst, the general manager for the Packers, yesterday. Remember back when Aaron Rodgers was on the tank top wearing punter podcast, saying that, you know, well, yeah, the Packers are not really, once they tell me what direction they're going, we're going to stop. Now we learn the truth. Brian Gutekunst, thank you very much for clarifying exactly how difficult it is to communicate with your quarterback.
Thing you and Aaron did to, I don't want to say repair the relationship, but the last 2 years after he, you know, said everything he did a couple of years ago. Then he comes out a couple of weeks ago and says you basically went behind his back to shop him and he didn't seem too pleased from your perspective. How did the last couple months kind of transpire?
Yeah, I didn't really take his comments like that, and it's certainly not true. I mean, I think, you know, as we got out of the off season or after the season, and we had a good conversation, and then, you know, we're going to have some follow-up conversations. And our inability to reach him or for him to respond in any way, I think at that point, then we just kind of I had to do my job and kind of reach out and understanding that a trade could be possible and see who was interested. But the shopping was never really part of that.
So when you gave him that contract extension, you've said publicly your intention was for him to not just play last season, to play beyond that. At what point did it shift to, okay, we need to move on?
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously it was a disappointing season, right? And you come out of the season, you have a lot of conversations, not only with Aaron, but with the rest of the team, coaches, and everybody. And as you go through that process, you kind of get an idea of where you're going to move to, you know, as a team, how you're going to go forward. And I think I was really looking forward to the conversations with Aaron to see how he fit into that. Those never transpired. So, there came a time where we had to make some, decisions. So we went through his representatives to try to kind of talk to him where we were going with our team. And at that point, they informed us they would like to be traded to the Jets.
He ghosted him. Aaron Rodgers ghosted the Packers. His boss, his GM, the guys who he, basically said that, hey, all's good. I'm going to have the conversations with them. I'm on the fence. He ghosted his employer. Come on, man.
Well, and then the fact that Aaron Rodgers perceived Brian Gutekunst to be going behind his back. Aren't you entitled to do that? Isn't that sort of the way? And I understand you got to give respect. You can maybe let your quarterback know what's up. But it's like the idea that that's behind. No, that's him doing his
what
job.
What else do they want?
It's his job.
What else does he expect?
Yeah.
The Packers, the city, the state, they've done everything for Aaron Rodgers except for name a cheese after him. Yeah. I mean, come on.
I feel like you could hear it in the tone of Gutekunst's voice.
Nah. Wouldn't you be?
He's just like, that's the tone. And they're trying really hard.
Hold on. Yeah. Suddenly you sound like the guy that was the same sound you made when you read about Yoan Moncada's back injury.
No, the Moncada is more like this. Like you get up, you're like, ah, okay. Jesus, again? With the Gutekunst, it's like, we'll see what's going on here. So it's
do people
different.
Tell the difference?
No, there's different forms of sighs. It's all in the sigh. Okay. It says everything.
It's all in the sigh.
Yeah, I'll send you the book.
There's
a
lot of sighing going on in Green Bay. There's a lot of sighing going on in Baltimore. Good thing the Bears are set on their quarterback. We heard from Ryan Poles on Monday about how he feels about Justin Fields. Why he believes in Justin Fields more than any quarterback in the draft, and that's why he pulled the trigger on the trade when he did. We'll hear about that conversation. We'll talk Bears when we come back. Mark Grody in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.